But I was just mentioning a second ago that Rabbi Winston asked me to give sort of a follow-up sichos mussar to those people who have joined for the winter Yarchei Kalwa. It's hard for me to imagine giving mussar to such a group, and I don't say that with any modesty or any false praise for you. But people who are taking their time during vacation, people who are usually working but they're off now, or people that have other things to do but they're linking on to shiurim. It's hard to imagine anything more impressive than that. You know, I remember when I spent many years learning in YU in the Kollel, and then after the Kollel. And sometimes when you're in a Beis Medrash setting, there's a very offensive thing. I see my friend Rabbi Sendik is on the call, among others as well. There's something very offensive that sometimes yeshiva bachurim say. And they say, they sort of like throw out a comment, oh, it's a balabatish. It's a balabatish svara, it's a balabatish comment. And, you know, there's something sort of the underpinnings of that comment is, well, you know, like a real lamdin says X, you know, balabas says something different, right? And you can sort of feel like the sense of superiority of being in a Beis Medrash. And of course, there is something beautiful about learning full time. When I came to be the rav of our shul in Muncie, over 15 years ago, and then prior to then being the rabbi in Einstein for 4 years, and I just came sort of face to face with like real live balabatim, just to see the mesiras nefesh of people coming to davening 3 times a day or once a day, or sending their kids to yeshiva and spending money on a Torah life and coming to shiurim and asking shilas while working and being involved in the community. You know, it's awe-inspiring. It's awe-inspiring. Just to see the commitment in the community. Forget about people who are learning full-time or rabbanim, but just people, you know, their commitment to Torah and community and tefillah is something that a day does not go by where I don't feel impressed by that. So I'm not sure that I should be giving anybody mussar. But I do want to maybe think about mussar, not so much in the dimyon of mussar being, okay, you should be doing something different, and I'm going to sit here, you know, ranting and raving and yelling about something, or telling you that you're not doing something that you should be doing, you know, and breaking shtenders. It's not really my style in the first place. But Musar, maybe more in the way that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and his Talmidim and the great Baalei Musar for 150 years, sort of their approach to Musar was to sort of take an inyan, to take a topic that is well known already, and to ask people the way I would ask myself, just to be me'ayin, to really give a deep, reflective, introspective, analytical look at that topic. Instead of us living lives of mitzvah, just to sort of go through life, do the same thing over and over again, to really take a close look at our behavior, close look at practices that we're all familiar with, and to try to continue to enrich and to continue to make full those daily practices. So I want to speak about a topic today that I'm sure all of us have already done today, and that is the topic of tefillah. And the reason I speak about tefillah is based on a very famous idea brought down by the Rishonim and by the Unkelos in Parshas Vayechi. The Torah tells us that when Yaakov is speaking to Yosef, a very famous unkelos, probably one of the most famous unkelos in all the Torah, "Vani nasati l'cha Shchem achad alachacha." I'm going to give you the city of Shchem. By the way, every time I learn this, I think about the image of what Shchem looks like today. That's not a political statement, but Shchem was a city of the burial of Yosef. It was a city that was already promised in the Torah to Yosef. And to think now that Shechem is not a place that probably any of us could walk into, at least not without a military accompaniment. So, because of what you are doing, Yosef, by ensuring that my body will be brought there to for burial, I will promise you the city of Shechem. And this city of Shechem, of course, we know has historical significance in Sefer Bereishis, asher lakachti miyad ha'emori b'charei b'kashti, that I took from the Emori. And who this Emori is a discussion that we showed him, but I took from the Emori b'charei b'kashti, with my sword and with the bow. the bow and arrow. I got the city of Shechem, Becharbi, Bekashti, and Yosef, I am bequeathing the city to you as your Yerusha. Now, these words, Charbi Ukashti, sounds pretty simple. We know, and we showed him say, that all battles and all conquerings need to be done with the military. We are forever grateful of having an Israeli army. We don't say just that God will bequeath something miraculously. We know that we need to be well-armed. So in theory, this pasuk of Becharbi Ukashti, that Shechem was conquered, Becharbi Ukashti, seems to be very pashut, seems to be very simple. But if you start looking around the Rishonim, and this is almost Rishonim across the board, Rashi, Rabbeinu Bechai, and many others as well, they don't say that it's simple at all. Rashi says that what's Charbi Ukashti? He says that with my intelligence, with my chachma, and with my tefillah, right? With my intelligence and with my prayer, with my tefillah. That's the way that I was able to conquer Shechem. And the unkelus, the targum here says, right, bitzlosi uvavousi, that I conquered Shechem with my tzlosi ubausi, with my various forms of tefillah. Now, one question that a person can pose is that any time that we have a midrashic understanding, whether it's Rashi bringing down the Medrash Rabbah or the Tanhuma, whether it's the Unkelus here, that they deviate from the pashtus of the pasuk, the question is why, right? What's forcing the hand of the Medrash, what's forcing the hand of Rashi that we showed him to deviate from the pashup shat? And of course, there is an entire literature on this topic of the Maharal and the Mizrahi and many others. What is it in the Psukim that forces Rashi or the Midrashim or Unkelus to change the Pshat? So I ask you for a second, what is it about the words Becharbi Ubekashti that forces Unkelus to say that this was Tefillah? Instead of just saying that Yaakov is saying the truth, that they actually conquered Shechem with the Chereb and with the Keshet. So there seems to be two different approaches that are taken both by the Rishonim and by Chazal, one of which actually is found in the Gemara of Bava Basra and Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel Med Aleph. The Gemara says that we know because David HaMelech says in Tehillim that wars are not won, or they're not only won, right, Becharbi Ubekashti, and therefore it can't just be that Yaakov Avinu was saying that he won Shechem militarily. But the Gemara says that it must be much more than that. So the Gemara says in Bava Basra that based on that pasuk of Tehillim, which of course comes much later, that we assume that it can't only be speaking about the sword or the gun or the bow and arrow. There must be something else here as well. Now, interestingly enough, I only saw this Rabbeinu Chai for the first time this year. It's always nice when you sort of find something new, right? You discover something new. Now, the good thing, by the way, I see my close friends, Rabbi Donath and Rabbi Berman and others, who I knew since they were young. You're already not as young as you once were. You're still Baruch Hashem young. But the good thing about getting older is that things are always new. Right? I see something 1 year. I see something 6 months later. It looked new again. It looks new again. It's like, you know, the mind doesn't always remember things. So there's always new chidushim because there's a good chance I forgot what I learned 6 months ago. But I actually think that this Rabbeinu Bechai, actually I've never seen before, that he says that if Yaakov was just speaking about the sword and the bow, so as the bow and arrow, he would have said, Asher lakafti miyad hamari becherev ubekeshet, with the sword and with the bow and arrow. But the very fact that he says Becharbi Ubekashti, it means something very specific to Yaakov, his chachma, his tefillah. It's not just sort of the general idea of the sword, but something specific to Yaakov's own koach, namely his tefillah and his Torah. Never mind, Bechai says that from there we see that's Becharbi Ubekashti, not Becherv Ukeshet, that's something very specific to Yaakov Avinu. Now, besides the question of why is it that the words Charbi Ukashti relate to tefillah or relate to chachma, there's maybe a different question. And the question is, in what way do we perceive tefillah as being charbi ukashti. Right? It's one thing for the Meforshim, the Noza Kalim and Rashi, maybe even the Gemara, to say the charbi ukashti must mean X. But the second question is, conceptually, as far as from a Hashgatic perspective, obviously, if what Yaakov is saying is that charbi ukashti, my sword and my bow, are referring to tefillah, so in what way do we show up to shul today for Mincha Maariv? In what way do you show up to shul for Shacharis tomorrow morning? And there's some image of our tefillah being dome to charbi ukashti. What's the imagery that's at work? And maybe the imagery is as simple as this is what we defend ourselves with. This is what we make gains with. This is what we accomplish. Those of us who are not actual warriors. So this is sort of our kli mochama, so to speak. But I want to think a little bit deeper about the imagery of charbi ukashti and how that relates to our tefillah. How do we have this image of our tefillah being a reflection or an outgrowth of charbi ukashti? So I want to think of three different pshatim. Now the most famous pshat, I'm going to actually let people mute themselves if they want. Anybody know the most sort of famous discussion about how tefillah is charbi ukashti? And what are these two different things, cherev and keshet? So the most famous pshat that I know of, right, Sandy, go say like?
Meshech Chachma.
It was the Meshech Chachma, right? Meshech Chachma is, Meshech Chachma says the following. Meshech Chachma is a fascinating sefer. It's often very, very difficult. For those of us who bought Meshech Chachma the last X amount of decades, you're benefited by Rabbi Cooperman's excellent Meshech Chachma with the footnotes. For those of us who perhaps would not have understood Meshech Chachma without that, the Meshech Chachma says the charbi ukashti, as all Meforshim do, is speaking about two different types of tefillah. But listen to this incredibly creative Meshech Chachma. He says there's a type of tefillah that is just the normal tefillah found in the Siddur, right? The normal miskeret of tefillah, the normal layout of tefillah that's found in the Siddur, the nusach tefillah, that's one kind of prayer. That's one kind of tefillah. And the second is that which a person is mechadesh in every single bracha. It's not part of the nusach tefillah, it's not the magdeya tefillah, but it's what each and every person themselves brings from their own needs, their own creativity, their own individual life into every bracha of the tefillah. Those are two different types of tefillahs, according to Meshech Chachma. And of course, Meshech Chachma brings plenty of Talmudic support, rabbinic support about these two different types of idea of tefillah. The Meshech Chachma says that each one of these types of tefillah requires a different level of kavana. If a person is just being mispalel based on the matbeah of tefillah established by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, he needs a lower level of kavana. In fact, the way that we paskin according to the Ramah is as long as you have kavana for the first bracha, maybe the first three brachos, because you're just following the matbeah HaTefillah, you require a lesser level of kavana. But when you're doing, quote unquote, your own thing, your own tefillos, your own chiddush and tefillah, that requires a higher level of kavana because you're sort of going like off, you know, off track a little bit. You're doing your own tefillah. You're being mechadesh your own tefillah. That requires a higher level of kavana. That's tzlosi uvohozozi. That's the different types of tefillah. And that's the cher of a keshet. Imagine for a second you have like a samurai warrior, or perhaps somebody who's not a samurai warrior, but he just found a sword. He found the sword of the samurai warrior. He can walk into a house. He can start swinging around. There may not be great kavana, but he's going to do damage with that sword. That's the first type of tefillah. Even without specific kavana, that tefillah is still effective. But when it comes to a person's own tefillah, his own chidushim in tefillah, his own innovation in tefillah, that requires a greater level of focus and a greater level of kavana. And that's, of course, the bow of the bow and arrow. If I just go willy-nilly shooting a bow and arrow around, there's a good chance I'm not going to come anywhere near my mark. There's a good chance I'm going to do no damage. And therefore, said the Meshech Chachma, that second type of tefillah, one's own chidushim, requires greater kavana. That's the image of what Yaakov Avinu is referring to as far as the keshet, as far as the bow. That's one idea of these two different images of the sword and of the bow, the bow and arrow. The second idea, what most Mefarshim point out, is that the charbi, the sword, is something that does damage right in front of you. You're fighting a person, you're in hand-to-hand combat, the person is 3 feet away from you, 5 feet away from you, you use a sword. You're trying to fight an enemy that's hundreds of feet away, so then you use a bow and arrow. And these two different ideas, slosi bosi, are tefillos right now, and tefillos for the distance. Tefillos that are immediate, and tefillos for something that's down the future. Rav Soloveitchik said so beautifully, those are two different types of tefillos for a person as well. What the cheriv is, what the tzlosi is I'm davening right now for today. Today for the world. Today for the health of the world. Today for the health of my family. Today for whatever the spiritual and physical needs of the person and the community are. What are the down the road needs? So Rav Soloveitchik says so beautifully that the ba'osi are tefillos that relate to Jewish destiny and the ultimate redemption, right? There's the tefillos that are immediate, and there are tefillos that have to do with the redemption, with Klal Yisrael, with the geula, with larger needs. That's the tefillah of the moment, and the tefillah that is so far beyond a person as well. So a lot of people know there's a beautiful discussion by Rav Kook. Rav Kook talks about the Gemara at the end of the fifth parak in Brachos about the necessity of a person davening by a window. And Cook says so beautifully in his Sefer and Brachos, the same idea. There's the tefillos of the person in a house, in a home, himself, his family, his life. And then there's also the idea of davening by a window, sort of seeing the world outside and the Jewish people, the future of the Jewish people, something that is far more future-oriented. And that, says the Rav, are these two different ideas, tefillosi va'osi, the cherev and the keshet. I want to maybe share maybe my own thought on the topic, and that's the following. What is the essence of tefillah? If you ask perhaps a child, a third grader, a fourth grader, I have a great schus of having my daughter teaching in Yeshivat Noam in Paramus, New Jersey. And she's actually home today as we speak because of a COVID concern. So I hear her in the back room as I'm speaking to you, asking her sixth graders and seventh graders, what does this mean? And what's the essence of that? And what's the essence of, or you know, what's the reason for fill in the blank? It's tremendous nachas, by the way, to have your children going into chinuch or klei kodesh or so many other meaningful fields as well. So if you would ask, say, a sixth grader, what is the essence of tefillah? Well, they would say, well, maybe to ask things from God, maybe to daven for other people. There'd be something which has almost like an element of us approaching God, like with requests. Maybe that might be the essence of tefillah, might be bakasha. But I want to read to you a incredible line from Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the most famous ideas in regards to tefillah. And this is something that Nefesh HaChaim speaks about at length as well. I'm going to read to you just three lines. Rabbeinu Yonah Perak Ein Omdin, Rabbeinu Yonah says the following. Be'inyan ha-mispalel, sarach she'yitein einav lamata v'libo lamala, Gemara Yivama says, person has to put their eyes downward and their heart, they have to have their heart facing upwards. Zel shona ha-kodosham, this is the lush of Rabbeinu Yonah there, klomar, she'yachshov b'libo ki'ilu omeg b'shemayim, a person feels like, I'm standing over here. I'm standing in Fairlawn, New Jersey. I'm standing in Teaneck, New Jersey. I'm standing wherever I am, living in Muncie, New York. But I feel a sense of transcendence. I sort of remove from me the worries of this world. I sort of leave behind my physical body during the process of tefillah. Like what the early ones had said. If you want to have kavana and tefillah, pshat gufcha me'al nishmascha. You sort of remove your body from your soul. Now that sounds somewhat, I would say mystical, but that idea, pshat gufcha me'al nishmascha, you're removing your body from your soul during that moment. Now the reality is that such an endeavor in tefillah is so far more significant than just asking God for something or just thanking God for something. But it's like the removal of the physical world and allowing ourselves to be in that transcendent state. It's like the return of the nefesh back to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And a person just connects to their breath. They breathe in and out. They allow sort of the world to almost like fall away from themselves. And a person just stands in that place, almost like the meditative place with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Pshot gufcha me'al nishmascha. When a person experiences that beauty of tefillah, of just standing, and the feeling of that the world has just almost like fallen away from oneself, and they're just standing, that feeling of that embrace with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, when a person has that, perhaps that's the Charbi Ukashti. The Cherev is right now, at this moment, the way that a sword engages only what's in front of a person. In that moment, when a person has that experience of pshot gufcha me'al nishmascha, that incredible feeling of transcendence. And at the same time, it's not only just for that moment, but in the same way that the keshet, that the bow and arrow is something that accomplishes its task for down the road, so tefillah as well. When a person is able to just stand, in that quiet embrace with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, in that quiet meditative place with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they're not worried about next week and they're not worried about next month. They're not anxious about money for the future. They're not worried about if I do this, then maybe that's going to happen, that's going to happen. A person is just still and silent and quiet in that space with your Ribono Shel Olam. Both as it relates to now and as it relates to the future. It's for a moment, having that moment of transcendence that allows us to sort of allow everything else to fall by the wayside in such a meaningful and beautiful way. Now, if there is mussar to be given, the mussar is that nothing happens meaningfully by itself. If we want our tefillah to be stale, if we want our tefillah to have an experience of hergel, so we come in, you know, a second beforehand or a second afterwards or 5 minutes afterwards, we open the siddur, we start moving our lips, and there's still value to that. There's still meaning to that. You're davening, which is amazing. You're in shul, which is amazing. But does it have that experience of Charbi Ukashti? Does it have that depth of connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in that experience? That only comes through a real avoda, getting to shul early, clearing a person's mind, breathing before davening, not being so interested in chuckling or gesticulating, but just sitting quietly and allowing one's soul to sort of settle within their body. That's an avodah shebelev that doesn't just happen. It doesn't just happen in a day or in a week. It's created over a lifetime. But that avodah is so worth it because it changes the tefillah from something that feels burdensome and boring and hergel and something I always do to just these beautiful few moments of that connection with the Ribono Shel Olam during tefillah. I want to add that one of the, I guess, elements, it's hard to say that a person has gratitude for a global pandemic. And of course, that's not the case. And I don't have gratitude that I had COVID, which I had over Rosh Hashanah. But I would say that over Rosh Hashanah, when I did have COVID, just incredible opportunity for so many of those days and the months beforehand of standing outside, just in the absolute quietude of the universe, without rushing, without people, without, so Rabbeinu Yonah says that the Makom Kavua is the Makom Kavua in a person's home. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says, actually. Just to have those moments of quietude in a person's life, in a person's tefillah. And I'm interested for so many of us who spend so much time davening by ourselves, we can take, to some degree, the quiet hisbodidus that hopefully someone's able to experience with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, bring that into our lives, to not just be mispalel, but to approach life with a feeling of charbiu kashti, that absolute feeling of armor and calm and safety and security and shleimus and serenity, that a life of tefillah, that being an eved b'tefillah, can bring a person. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the shiurim this week. I wish all of us should continue to learn together and to grow together. Thank you, everyone.